Welcome to the Gene Oliver Podcast, where we talk all things business, art, and lifestyle. This is your podcast for building a more creative life. I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day-to-day like I was. Go to GeneOliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at GeneOliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. Welcome back to the podcast. I am Gene Oliver, and today I am talking with Kathy Graves. She is an artist, speaker, Enneagram lover, giver of great wisdom, and the creator of the Good Daughters Club. Kathy, welcome to the podcast. Would you tell everyone a little bit about you and your business before we get started?
Well, hi, Gene. Thank you for having me. And first, I want to say, she sounds like a really amazing person. I didn't know this, Kathy Graves.
She's amazing.
You make me sound really good. Oh, my. What was the question? My business. Yes, I am currently focusing on my art probably more than anything else. I am continuing to grow that aspect of it. I've done a little bit of Enneagram teaching, and I still do that where opportunities arise. But really, it's my art and this other little thing we're going to be talking about that we're going to see what happens with that in the future.
There are so many directions I could go in an interview with you, but I want today to be just about the journey of caring for a parent. Would you share a bit of the journey that started the heart and the need for the Good Daughters Club?
Yes, I would love to. It's a long story. So the short version, I think I need to go back just a little bit and tell you about my family and how we wound up in a situation of being the caregiver. I have one sibling who is 14 and a half years my senior. So he was out of the house. Really, I have barely any recollection of growing up with him. So it was really two separate families. And my father was a functioning alcoholic, and I think my brother just left. And so he never lived in our same city. My father passed away suddenly when I was 27 in 1986. And they had my husband, Kurt, you know Kurt, were living in Oklahoma. And my parents had moved to Tulsa to be close to us. He passed away suddenly and left my mom widowed. So that's a really long time ago. A few years later, we decided to move to Charlotte to start a business. And my husband said, "We're only going if Lucille will go with us, my mother," which was precious. And she was still very active and had friends, but they had only lived in Oklahoma for a few years. So basically no family and not a huge network of friends. She had to go with us, or it didn't feel right. So she said, sure. So we all caravanned to Charlotte, and she lived separately and started her life here and got connected in a lot of ways. But she's a very quiet, shy person, and so she has never had super deep relationships. So she has depended on us. And about 5 or 6 years after we moved here, we bought a house that was larger and had already been divided up to have an apartment in the back part of the house. I found it. It was a very random kind of thing. And we hadn't ever even discussed living together. But another side part of our story is we were just coming out of a failed business situation. And really, this was an amazing opportunity for us to get back into a house, to buy something in a nicer neighborhood, to have her closer to us as she was aging, all those things. It was kind of a God thing we felt and still do. And so we all moved in together, and it was, she was really independent. I was working a full-time corporate job. Kurt was working full-time. And it was probably 3-4 years into that that we began to notice some things that alerted us to the fact that, you know, she cognitively, she could be, her cognitive abilities could be diminishing. And because of proximity, we saw everything she did. And so we were able to get her in for testing and to get a diagnosis of Alzheimer's really fairly early in the disease, which was beneficial. But that, so our journey kind of began at that time.
As the dynamics of your relationship changed with your mom, what do you remember most about this time?
Oh, Jean, this brings up so much. You have, these questions are great, by the way. And some of them are things I haven't thought about in quite a while. So I had to think long and hard about that. This is not a comprehensive list, but one recurring theme was the oddity of mothering your mother, that mm-hmm. journey. It was just weird. And at the time, another side story, because, you know, life's not compartmentalized and you don't, you know, say, okay, I'm going to go through this now for these 10 years and then we'll do the next thing, right? We're seeing that now with COVID and people are still getting cancer and still having, you know. But we had been going through a decade-long journey of infertility. And so that was kind of going on as my mother's disease was progressing. And also we had and still have a network of friends that are closer to your age, so younger at the time. And they were getting out of college, some were getting married, then they were starting to have children while I was going through all this other. So it was very lonely in that respect, because we had wonderful friends, but they had no idea what it was like because they were nowhere near this stage in life. And so I remember a couple of stories. One time I was actually was in a band with a bunch of guys from my church, and this young guy, they were all young, you know, I was probably late 30s or 40, and they were all in their 20s, and I would come in frazzled to band practice, and, you know, just something had happened with my mom or whatever, and I didn't talk about it a lot, but I would try to share, and I mean, these guys are kids, and I remember he shared a story about his grandma, who had lived with them when he was growing up for a while and who apparently had dementia, and how one time she came to the dinner table in her underwear and, you know, ha ha ha, you know, it was funny. I mean, that's funny on some levels, but it wasn't funny to me. You know, it was like, dude, my mother never did that, but I'm like, this is my life, man. And you saw it as a 10-year-old kid, I guarantee your mother was not laughing at that moment.
Right.
And I thought, this is just weird. And I can remember some of my young moms talking, you know, I've always felt like an outsider in those respects. And, you know, everybody gets together and talks about what their kids are doing. And they would tell stories about something their 4-year-old did that day. I remember one time thinking, oh, my mom did that today. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't funny, and it was weird. And I can't, oh, isn't that cute? There was nothing cute about it. And so I spent a lot of time thinking, this is just really strange. Yeah. So that's one thing. Yeah, okay, well, let's see. One other thing that I thought of, I'm thinking how I want to put this. The feeling that a lot of people say I just want my mom back, you know, these, and I've other women friends who have gone through this, you know, I just need my mom here now to encourage me or to guide me or this or that. And I didn't really have that experience. My mom and I were close, and now I recognize there was a lot of codependency there. And, I know from people telling me that, you know, your mom depended on you from the time you were born. I was the only child, basically, and my dad was off traveling, drinking, and whatever. And so I felt like the way she cared for me was more through her worry or her anxiety for me. And so I would try to push that away. But I just think I really lived into the dutiful daughter role in this aspect. And now I see that that led to some resentments, mm-hmm. Which is another whole part of the whole thing. So.
Where did you struggle? I think you've shared that a little bit.
Yeah.
What actually surprised you that you were able to do better than you had imagined?
That question tripped me up. I think it's easy for me to share the struggles. Mm-hmm. That is my predisposition in life anyway. And so I could come up with a bunch of those, but I think as I was thinking through it, I realized that my areas of greatest struggle could become my, areas of my greatest strength at other times. So, my patience really grew, she lived with me. She was there all the time. We had a door that separated us at the beginning, and we replaced it with a swinging door. The house originally had the swinging door that went into from like the dining room into the kitchen. And that's where the house was cut up into her apartment. So we put the swinging door back in. And I could hear her come through that door, and she would sneak around, on the hardwood floors and look around for us to see if we were there and try to be real quiet. And it would just send me sometimes because it would be a time when I didn't want to see her. And so in those moments, times when I really lived into patience and compassion and empathy. And then there were other times where I behaved in ways that, you know, were shameful, you know. One time I can remember, this is one of the most moments, and it's embarrassing for me to admit it, but I think it's important to share. I think it's a common human experience, but she came upstairs, and upstairs was kind of our sacred place. So our bedroom was up there, but also the laundry room was on the other end, and she knew she was allowed to go up there, do laundry or fold laundry. And I was mad at her for something, and she crossed the boundary. I was upstairs, and she started coming up the stairs, and we were arguing, and she went through the line, and my head was about to explode in that moment. And I remember she came down the hall, and I put my hand, she was little, not much bigger than me, put my hands on her shoulders, and I didn't hurt her, but I had a flash second there where I almost just shook her. And I'm not proud of that, but that's a reality. And so, you know, I could take that same situation and remember other times where I responded with patience and grace. So yeah, the struggles and it all blends together.
I think too, if there was a point of something that I had read that you had written, and I don't know if you spoke it, you talked about that here you had so desperately wanted a child after 10 years, but after 10 years you didn't get a child, but you had your mother live with you that then started to become a child. And I think the thing is that that we're given these babies, right? If you have a child, and all of those feelings, the tired, the frustration, the impatience, you know, but there's this little person. And then you are going through this with somebody who used to care for you. And like you said, you would hear a story and you're like, okay, well, that just happened this week in my home too, but it's not funny, or it's right. not cute, or, right. you know, and I don't have anybody, like you have a mom's group. I don't have a this group to go to know what to do or how to deal with all of these emotions too. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you are a sharer of knowledge by nature. That's just who you are. And did you find yourself helping others while you were also helping your mom, or were you able to only help other people after your mother had passed away? When did the gathering of your experience and knowledge pass from you to others?
And we'll talk about this later when you ask me, but the Good Daughters Club, actually, I made it up. I started it. I founded it in the middle of it with a few other friends who were going through a similar situation. But it took years. Again, like I said, I had mostly younger friends. And so I didn't really have anyone to help at that point in time. Until we formed this bond with these few friends. And then after my mother passed away, well, we moved her to assisted living toward the end, and she lived for another year and a half. So she was still alive and I was still involved, but it was a very different kind of situation. But at that time, and even after she died for a number of years, actually it was a shorter time than a number of years, but I thought to myself, I don't want to think about death. I don't want to think about old people. I don't want to think about dementia. I'm done. You know, thank you very much. 13 years, really, I don't need anybody else. And then I did have a couple of younger women that I was acquainted with who actually both of them, their moms got early Alzheimer's diagnoses. And they came to me and said, could you help me? And it's funny because I have had women and couples have come to us, same thing regarding infertility or someone's had a miscarriage or this or that. We walk with that through us. And I've been very hesitant. We've done it a few times, but that is a wound that it just, I don't know. But when the one came to me, I just thought, I have to. Mm-hmm. I just have to. Mm-hmm. And so that's when it kind of opened up for me, really.
Well, I think the name The Good Daughters Club is so packed with unspoken meaning, like what you want to do, what you feel you should do, what mm-hmm. a good daughter would do, right? Yeah. So tell me about the name and how you arrived at it.
It's not really that creative, is it?
I actually think it is, though. I think it says it. Well, I think it says it all. The Good Daughters Club. I mean, like I said, it has a lot of packed meaning. It must have been what you felt like with those other women coming together because it was making a choice each day to do something that might not have been what you felt like doing, but in the end, it's exactly what you would have wanted to do.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. I just kind of midway through my journey, one of my closest friends that I've mentioned her to you, Deb, she's closer to your age. She had a mother very early on, had a lot of mental issues. And then anyway, it doesn't matter, but she was diagnosed with some early dementia and she died in her 60s. So she was going through that with her mom. Another friend who's about 10 years older than me was going through a very similar situation that I was going through. And then a woman who I was introduced to, who had just moved from California. She's about my age. She's a designer. She's now one of my very, very best friends. They had moved here with her mother, and her mom was in assisted living, but it was a similar thing. She didn't know anybody. She was lost in this weird place of the southeastern United States from Bakersfield, California. And so I was the common bond really in the group. I got us together one time physically and said, all right, we're Good Daughters Club because we are good daughters. Mm-hmm. And so I had visions of how we might really all of us care for each other. And it didn't work out. Everybody was going their separate ways. All of these women, I was having conversations with all three of them, and it saved me. I mean, it really did. For one thing, I think, well, we all, none of us believe we're good daughters. Even it doesn't matter how much we do. And this has been a common experience as I meet people and hear that they're going through something, you know, and I will say, you are such a good daughter. And it's the same response. Well, we all feel like we should be doing more. And that's, I think that's just women in general, whether it's your children or your, you know, whatever, we never feel like we're good enough. But I think, to tell each other those words. And also with these women, I think a lot of us, we're trying to protect the dignity of our parent, but all kinds of stuff happens. And, you know, we can be so angry, and we need someone to vent with, complain to, who is safe. And we know that they never would make fun of our parent. We can laugh and say things that we just wouldn't say to the world at large, you know, because we know they know our parent and they love our parent, but this thing happened and I just got to tell somebody. So that was a huge value for me.
When did you know that what you had learned needed to be shared?
I knew it when people came to me and asked me. Yeah, I knew it, and I resisted, but I had something to offer, which didn't feel like a lot, but it was just to be able to say, I kind of get it.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it was really at that point, but I didn't really want to.
When you began to share, what was the response? And is this just another area that we're slow to admit that we need help? And why is that? Because nobody should. Nobody should be afraid. Just if you were a new mom having postpartum, that, you know, you need to be able to ask people for help and not feel like, or you're a new mom in general, or marriage, you know, your marriage is struggling and you need help. Or in this area, if you are dealing with a parent that you're going to be a caregiver, why would we think we're supposed to hold those answers? And so back to the question, like, when you began to share, what was the response, and why do you think we have such a hard time admitting we need help?
Well, that answer is as varied as people are varied. I mean, I'm not going to make this about the Enneagram, but, you know, it applies, right? Some of us won't admit we need help because we're the helpers of the world, or some of us don't want to be seen as vulnerable or just don't trust others to help them. So there are many, many reasons. But I think to answer the other part of your question, what was the response? It just, for someone to tell their story and have that story land in a safe place, because it's really, I think it's difficult to share maybe with your own family, because they're in the midst of it as well. And, you know, maybe you don't want to just dwell on it or complain about it to them, or maybe they don't care and they've stopped listening or they don't get it. But to just go to someone who doesn't necessarily have any emotional in the game, you know, and can look at things like some of the women that, you know, I have walked alongside a little bit. I didn't know their mothers, these two women that came to me. I had never met their mothers and never did meet their mothers. And I didn't know all the family dynamics, but they could come to me and just say it all. And maybe I could challenge them, but mostly just listen and remind them, well, of a lot of things. And one of them is, you know, it won't last forever. There is an ending, which is the weird thing about it. Like you were saying with children, you're children, investing in your children and going through their terrible twos when they're throwing tantrums. And it's not easy, but you know there's this purpose. And it's even there's a cuteness about these things that, you know, what I know is that my story with this person will end, it seems like forever, but really pretty soon, and it will always end in death, always. That's, we're leading toward death. And, it's just so mixed up and twisted. And so I really mostly did a lot of listening.
Mm-hmm. How long has your mom been gone, and what is the grieving process like for you now?
She's been gone, it was 8 years in March, and a lot happened right after her death. We were in the middle of the recession, and so a lot of other things in life were, crazy stuff was happening, and so I kind of, as I alluded to before, I think, well, for us, there was so much relief, and it was healthy. You know, it had been a long goodbye, and it wore everybody out. It was heartbreaking to watch her. And so for us at the end, it was quite peaceful, and there was a lot of relief. And of course, you know, a lot of things I wish I had done differently. That's just, you know, I'm not a no regrets person. I'm working on that. But we knew we had done our best for her and honored her. And my response was kind of like, all right, done with that. Please just give me a break here and let me, as I said before, I just don't want to think about old people. And I just want to just have a normal life. That was normal life. That is fully normal life experience. But let me put it away. So I kind of, I put grieving on hold, I think. And the trauma of it all was still so fresh. All those moments I talked about that, you know, it's just, it was very fresh. It took me years, honestly. I'll bet it took me 4 or 5 years, it seems weird to say this, but to really begin to remember some of who she was before the illness. And again, our relationship was always pretty complicated, and like I said, now I realize, pretty codependent. But I have some wonderful memories, but those just kind of got sidelined and overshadowed. And so those are returning to me now. And so really after 4 or 5 years, I began to feel sadness, mm-hmm. In a healthy way, mm-hmm. and a fondness for my mother, and just a love, and a just remember joyful things.
Well, and I think dementia also, that I know this is not something I asked you, but it was something that I just thought about that I would, if you're able to answer it. So here your mom is beginning to show signs of dementia. My question for you is, if you could go back, or if you could, if someone's listening and they are in the beginning stages of dementia, or somebody that they know is, how do you help somebody? Because I would think that would be one of the scariest things to walk through for your mother, first and foremost, for your mother to know that there is a part of me that is going away, and I, at some point, don't know what I'll remember, what I'll know, who I will be. That's a very, very scary idea and truth, right? And so how, and I have another friend whose mom is walking through this. So how do you honor this process, and what do you wish maybe you would have documented better or helped your mom to actually handle her grief during that time also?
Boy, oh boy, that's a great question. I think our experience with my mother was a little less common. How do I say this? My mom, she was born in 1919. She barely graduated high school. I think I realized later in her life, I put some pieces of a puzzle together that I think she may have had some sort of learning disability as a child. And so she was, I think she had a low IQ, but I think she had some issues, and she was very mistreated by some family members, and so she had zero self-esteem. Simple person, farm is growing up dirt poor. So what I'm saying is she she was a very simple person in that certain things she loved in life and gave her life to. She loved her church. She loved to sing. She loved these sort of things. And so when she got the diagnosis, so you have to remember this now was almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. So a lot has even changed in 20 years, right? There weren't a lot of resources, and frankly, I don't think she would, to give her something to read wouldn't have been great for her or helpful for her. So this is a terrible thing to say in some ways, but we lied some. We lied. She wouldn't ask those questions that I think about myself, and just what you're saying, and I can't even watch the movies or hear the podcasts or read the books about the people who are, you know, in the early stages, brilliant minds who are now having to let go. I can't identify with how I would feel, but we would take her to the doctor, and they didn't tell her a lot. We never told her she would get well. She knew that. But I don't think she fully understood the progression. Mm-hmm. And we got her on the medications that, of course, we knew wouldn't get rid of it, but would the progression or mask the symptoms. And it did. It was very successful. So I think it just is weird because at the beginning, I think she was less worried than we were. And mm-hmm. I don't think that's a real common experience. So I'm not sure how to answer your question, but I would think that if another mother, that would have been a lot harder and really heartbreaking from that aspect, yeah. To have compassion and empathy over they're just, Jean, here's the fact of the matter. Whether you have dementia or not, what one great lesson we watched up close and personal, and that we're now, I mean, I'm 61, so very vibrant, don't you think?
Yes, and beautiful.
My point is, I am still very, and you know, whatever, I don't really feel like I'm my age and all those things, but I'm starting to get glimpses into what the aging process means. Even best case scenario is that it's a process of you're losing one thing after another. Mm-hmm. One thing after another, your ability to do this, or even, you know, I don't go out at night and drive quite as much as I used to. It's slow progression for a lot of people, but you're not really gaining much. Things are just being taken away. And that is hard. And, you know, when we had to take my mother's car keys away, I just, those moments, yeah, it gave me, and all the things I was saying about dignity, how to dignity, I think about that a lot. And again, it wasn't my experience that I had to navigate through that with a parent, but I think there are a lot of resources out there now to help people. But still, to know you have it, those early stages, I just think it's the worst. For the person.
For people right now caring for an aging parent, what advice do you want to give?
Well, I wrote a few things down, and it is far from comprehensive, but they just came to my mind pretty quickly. I already said this one once. Find yourself, it won't last forever. It may last a long time. But I just know that I've said that to a number of my friends that, you know, this feels awful now, but with that disease especially, and caring for parents isn't just about Alzheimer's. Of course, there are all kinds of different ways, but it shifts the stages, the situation, the scenario, the things that are going on now likely won't be going on a year from now. There'll be a new set of issues or whatever, but eventually it ends. And so
I think there's actually two ways to look at that, because it's almost like if you take the toddler years or the infant years to say they're not going to last forever. In one stage, it's saying they will, like that they will grow out of that. And I mean, I know you're talking about they will, yeah. Death or will yeah. come, but there's also right. that you will not have this opportunity forever.
Right.
The other side of it is your chance to love, care for them, bring dignity, have one more time to hug them, spend time yeah. with them, brush their hair, whatever their thing is, that yeah. will come to an end too, you know? And I think that there's two sides of that as hard as it is, there will be an end point, but as hard as it is, there will actually be no more opportunity to help also.
Right.
And so, yeah.
Right. And we can apply that to everything in life. Right?
Yeah.
You know, try to find something in the present moment that is worth valuing. Yeah. So that's one thing. Be willing to make some hard decisions that may be questioned by other family members who are not in the thick of it with you. You know, that could be a whole podcast in and of itself. I did not also have this experience. My sibling was not present and never. So, and that was difficult. However, our care for Kurt and I, our care for my mom was never questioned, and that was a gift. Gift, because I've seen it break families apart, and it's really sad. And I've seen siblings who are far away question and nitpick, and I mean, sometimes, of course, that's very valid. But we have lived that situation with Kurt's mother, who did not have any dementia. Sharp as a tack, but she had a lot of health issues and died just a couple months ago. So we were the the children across the country who could not participate in her care. It fell on Kurt's sister primarily, and then his brother, who was a couple hours away. And, you know, it about broke his sister. But we offered emotional support in every way possible that we could think of. And also, just even if there were some things where we thought, well, maybe she should look at this or do this a little bit, you know what? Let it go. Let her. She is the one. And how can we support her in it? And so I think because of that, and just because he and his siblings are emotionally intelligent and love each other and care most of all cared for his mom, we didn't have any arguments. And so just keep the drama down, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Find at least one safe person with whom you can vent without dishonoring the dignity of your parent or feeling like you're dishonoring the dignity. For me, it certainly was Kurt, my husband. We could laugh about things. There wasn't a lot of humor. That's another one of my points. My mom, being such a sensitive, hypersensitive person, like you couldn't tease her about anything and joke around about the kind of things we can. Kurt and I could do that about her with each other, but I felt safe because I knew how much he loved her, and it was not dishonoring her dignity. It was just venting and finding some kind of release valve, you know. And I think everybody needs to have that one person. And then that's, again, one of the roles that Good Daughters Club, the women played for me, is we could, can you believe she did that? You know, those sort of things. So I think that's good. Stay healthy. Take care of yourself. Again, Jean, you know, I could talk for 3 podcasts on that alone. And it breaks my heart. I see women. I was an exception because I don't have children. What happens with most, you know, same thing for you, for most of my friends, is they're sandwiched in between their children and their parents. And I mean, it can be a mess. And you're pulled in so many directions, and there's no time left for you. And you have to. I think I read somewhere years ago about illness within caregivers or failing health within caregivers. Mm. And, you know, their health just goes to pot. Because, I mean, if statistically you look at it, most women who are caring for parents are going to be in their 40s, 50s, and 60s, and maybe into their 70s. So you've got menopause going on, you've got all the other things, and then you've got coping mechanisms. Don't I know about those? I mean, more wine at night because you just need something, or just the comfort food, or there's no time to exercise. All those basic things that apply to every situation. Mm-hmm. Really apply here.
Yeah.
For
those listening that have friends or family that are in the role of caring for an aging parent, what can they do to support and take care of these caregivers? So often we can say, let me know if you need anything. And we all really know that very rarely will that person ever tell you what they really need. And so tell us what they do need so we can love them through action.
That's a tough one. And again, it varies from person to person to, you know, and it also, it depends on relational you are to someone. You know, if my closest friends know me and they know instinctively that something, flowers would, or whatever. So you don't always get that, but it's interesting. There was really only one or two times I can think that someone offered something concrete. And one was a guy that we're still friends with. He just said, hey, can I come take Lucille for a walk? Take her to the park? And he did that a few times. And again, because she lived with us, those moments, I needed them. And so if you have that relational aspect with somebody, or you know the parent, whether they're the parent may be living in an assisted living situation or with someone, or maybe they live on their own somehow, go visit the parent. So maybe today I get a day off. I don't have to worry that no one came to visit my mom because so-and-so did. I think that that's one of the best things. This one, no one did this for me, and it wouldn't have really been, well, it would have been helpful maybe, but I don't know, a meal. Take the parents a meal. I did all my mom's cooking there. Of course, we unplugged her stove at some point, and that was not hard for me, but that gives someone a legitimate break. Affirm them. Again, you can't tell a woman too many times that she's a good daughter. Mm. You just, and so just those words. I mean, seriously, Jean, when I meet people in, I'll meet someone for the first time and we'll get in a conversation and they'll maybe mention it. And I'll say those words. I'll just say, gosh, it makes me cry. And I say, you are really a good daughter. And you see their faces just because you know they don't believe it themselves. Mm-hmm. So you can't say it enough. And, you know, send a card. I am working now on a line of some cards using my art with some words that are more specifically geared. I think one thing many people struggle with, you know, in all different areas, I just don't know what to say. And I'm not good with words. And, you know, there isn't really a greeting card for that. I mean, there are encouragement cards that would apply, but I feel like I'm okay with words. And it's something that if a person just had that there and they could just say, love, Kathy, and send it, I don't know. They just know that someone is on your mind, even if you can't, not in the same city or you're there. I would say, you know, give them a certificate for a manicure or a massage or a day out, you know, those sort of things. And maybe that works for some, but for many women, they don't have any time.
Yeah.
They don't have the time.
No, those are great suggestions. And I think it's just the simplicity of it is do something. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have the right words.
Right.
You don't have to have, like, give the perfect gift. The thing is, what you've said is show up. Can I sit with them? Do you need to run errands?
Yes.
And can I give you a break? Okay.
Yes.
What you would suggest to a new mom is okay to suggest to somebody that's a caregiver. So
very overlap.
So to give it, get a break, which can even mean, let me come and sit or let me be present and you can do some things in the house that you want to do. Just so you can take your eyes off of them. And then I think, like you said, to provide a meal, to not let them think that you have forgotten. And that's what the card says, to say that I see you, you are not forgotten, you're doing a great job, and to encourage them. And those are really simple things that no matter, you know, we all can show up in those easy ways. Because really, I mean, those are doable. Those are really doable things. And so,
can I go back to thing that I failed to mention that I really want to say because I think it's super important. It's really cool. In your last question, ways of supporting advice you want to give someone, have the hard financial discussions with your parents. I'm telling you, that is one thing I feel Kurt and I wouldn't change a thing about the way all of that worked with us. And I give my mom a lot of credit for that because she trusted us. And again, she was widowed early. And Kurt was a CPA at the time. And so financially astute. And she just handed over everything and said, figure this out. And, you know, consequently, she lived almost 30 more years as a widow and no income, living a good life because we made a plan and she trusted us and she was compliant. So it's frightening to me, Jean, when we talk to people about their own financial situations, my own peers. And I think, my goodness, they have given their children the life of all lives. And here I am preaching as a non-parent to parents, which I rarely do. But that's great if you can give your children every experience they need to have. I'm going to tell you, when they're 50 years old and you're out of money and it falls on them, they're going to hate you for it. So that is a gift to give them as well, is to take care of your own financial affairs.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I would love to close with one last question. If you were not an artist, what would your alternative career choice be?
I'm an Enneagram 6, Jean. We don't dream a lot. And there's a lot of qualifiers and pre-qualifiers. I'd say, well, if I could do this, I would do that. So just the straight answer is I would probably be a performer. I have a background and I'd be some sort of singer, songwriter, star, even though I hate to travel. But see, this is dream world, right? I'd be an actor. I don't know that you even knew this, but I got an agent and started doing some acting when I was 50 years old in Charlotte, because there used to be a lot of commercial acting here and even a lot of film here, and they took away the tax benefits. So I worked a fair amount for 4 or 5 years. It was really fun. But it all went to Georgia. But I would do something like that, or I would be a florist. I would do beautiful, high-end, amazing floral arrangements. I don't know. I'd decorate cakes. I used to say when I was a kid, I'd love to be an artist.
Well, see?
Who knew?
You're living it. I know. Those are great, though.
Thanks.
Would you please tell our listeners where they can find you and learn more about your art and the Good Daughters Club?
Sure. I have a website, www.kathigraves.com. So on my website, I showcase my art, of course, but I also blog. And so you can sign up for my newsletter, which I'm about to ramp up again, but not in an annoying way. So you can sign up for my newsletter there. I'm pretty active on Instagram, which is at Kathy Graves Art. Again, it's Kathy, K-A-T-H-I. Facebook, same thing. What am I forgetting? Oh, I do have an Etsy shop, which is also Kathy Graves Art. And I sell some of my note cards, some prints, smaller items mostly. And you can always email me or reach me for commissions. I love doing paintings, art commissions. So,
and your art can often be found in Charlotte in different galleries and around town, and all of that information would be on your website too, correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Kathy, yes. Thank you for taking the time to talk today about your mom, about that journey that you went on together, and just to share some advice for people. And I think, too, the biggest thing that I think going away from this is that that the Good Daughters Club is just a reminder that you, for the men and women caring for your parents, that you are doing a great job. It is hard work. It's a reverse in your roles that you don't just instinctively know what to do, but you are doing so well. And then for other people that are around them, guys, that we can show up through just time, giving them extra hands, providing a meal, words of encouragement, and just letting them know that they're not alone. And so thank you so much, Kathy, for sharing.
It was a pleasure to be here with you, Jean. Always a pleasure.
I created a free resource and mini workbook just for you. 10 tips to take back the peace for a more beautiful life. A free ebook if you're looking for some rest in your day today like I was. Go to jeanoliver.com/10tips to get your free resource. Creativity is calling. Become the artist you have dreamed to be. After the podcast, meet me over at jeanoliver.com, where you will find art, business, and lifestyle online courses. We have over 150 courses from teachers around the world. Thank you for joining me this week. Don't forget to let us know what you thought of this week's podcast, and make sure you never miss an episode by subscribing. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.